Secretary General of all time, Secretary General Murray, Excellencies, distinguished guests. We meet to address man's most fundamental need. The threat of famine, the fact of hunger, have haunted men and nations throughout history. Our presence here is recognition that this eternal problem has now taken on unprecedented scale and urgency, and that it can be dealt with only by concerted worldwide action. Our challenge goes far deeper than one area of human endeavor or one international conference. We are faced not just with the problem of food, but with the accelerating momentum of our interdependence. The world is midway between the end of the Second World War and the beginning of the 21st century. We are stranded between old conceptions of political conduct and a wholly new environment, between the inadequacy of the nation state and the emerging imperative of the global community. In the past 30 years, the world came to assume that a stable economic system and spreading prosperity would continue indefinitely. New nations launched themselves confidently on the path of economic and social development. Technical innovation and industrial expansion promised steady improvement in the standard of living of all nations. Surpluses of food, fuel, and raw materials were considered a burden rather than a blessing. While poverty and misery still afflicted many parts of the globe, over the long run, there was universal hope. The period was fairly characterized as a revolution of rising expectations. That time has ended. Now there are fundamental questions about our capacity to meet even our most basic needs. In 1972, partly due to bad weather around the globe, world grain production declined for the first time in two decades. We were made ominously conscious of the thin edge between hope and hunger, and of the world's dependence on the surplus production of a few nations. In 1973, first a political embargo, and then abruptly raised prices for oil, curbed production in the world's factories and farms, and sharply accelerated a global inflation that was already at the margin of government's ability to control. In 1974, the international monetary and trading system continues under mounting stress, not yet able to absorb the accumulated weight of repeated shocks, its institutions still struggling to respond. The same interdependence that brought common advance now threatens us with common decline. We must act now, and we must act together to regain control over our shared destiny. Catastrophe, when it cannot be foreseen, can be blamed on a failure of vision or on forces beyond our control. But the current trend is obvious, and the remedy is within our power. If we do not act boldly, disaster will result from a failure of will. Moral culpability will be inherent in our foreknowledge. The political challenge is straightforward. Will the nations of the world cooperate to confront a crisis which is both self-evident and global in nature? Or will each nation or region or plot see its special advantage as a weapon instead of as a contribution? Will we pool our strengths and progress together, or test our strengths and sink together? President Ford has instructed me to declare this on behalf of the United States. We regard our good fortune and strength in the field of food as a global trust. We recognize the responsibilities we bear, by virtue of our extraordinary productivity, advanced technology, and our tradition of assistance. That is why we propose this conference. That is why a Secretary of State is giving this address. The United States will make a major effort to match its capacity to the magnitude of the challenge. We are convinced that the collective response will have an important influence on the nature of the world that our children inherit. As we move toward the next century, the nations assembled here must begin to fashion a global conception. For we are irreversibly linked to each other by interdependent economies and human aspirations, by instant communications and nuclear peril. The contemporary agenda of energy, food, and inflation exceeds the capacity of any single government, or even of a few governments acting together, to resolve. All nations, East and West, North and South, are linked to a single economic system. Preoccupation with narrow advantage is foredoomed. It is bound to lead to sterile confrontations, undermining the international cooperation upon which the achievement of national objectives depends. The poorest and weakest nations will suffer most. Discontent and instabilities will be magnified in all countries. New dangers will be posed to recent progress in reducing international tensions. But this need not be our future. There is great opportunity as well as grave danger in the present crisis. Recognition of our condition can disenthrall us from outdated conceptions, from institutional inertia, from sterile rivalries. If we comprehend our reality and act upon it, we can usher in a period of unprecedented advance with consequences far transcending the issues before this conference. We will have built an international system worthy of the capacities and aspirations of mankind. We must begin here with the challenge of food. No social system, ideology, or principle of justice can tolerate a world in which the spiritual and physical potential of hundreds of millions is stunted from elemental hunger or inadequate nutrition. National pride or regional suspicions lose any moral and practical justification if they prevent us from overcoming this scourge. A generation ago, many farmers were self-sufficient. Today, fuel, fertilizer, capital, and technology are essential for their economic survival. A generation ago, many nations were self-sufficient. Today, a few food exporters provide the margin between life and death for many millions. Thus, food has become a central element of the international economy. A world of energy shortages, rampant inflation, and a weakening trade and monetary system will be a world of food shortages as well. And food shortages, in turn, sabotage growth and accelerate inflation. The food problem has two levels. First, coping with food emergency, and second, assuring long-term supplies and an adequate standard of nutrition for our growing populations. During the 1950s and 60s, global food production grew with great consistency. Per capita output expanded even in the food deficit nations. The world's total output increased by more than half. But at the precise moment when growing populations and rising expectations made a continuation of this trend essential, a dramatic change occurred. During the past 3 years, world cereal production has fallen. Reserves have dropped to the point where significant crop failure can spell a major disaster. The long-term picture is, if anything, starker still. Even today, hundreds of millions of people do not eat enough for decent and productive lives. Since increases in production are not evenly distributed, the absolute numbers of malnourished people are, in fact, probably greater today than ever before, except in times of famine. In many parts of the world, 30 to 50% of the children die before the age of five, millions of them from malnutrition. Many survive only with permanent damage to their intellectual and physical capacities. World population is projected to double by the end of the century. It is clear that we must meet the food need that this entails. But it is equally clear that population cannot continue indefinitely to double every generation. At some point, we will inevitably exceed the Earth's capacity to sustain human life. The near as well as the long-term challenges of food have three components. There's the problem of production. In the face of population trends, maintaining even current inadequate levels of nutrition and food security will require that we produce twice as much food by the end of the century. Adequate nutrition would require 150% more food, or a total annual output of 3 billion tons of grain. There is the problem of distribution. Secretary General Murray estimates that at the present rate of growth of 2.5% a year, the gap between what the developing countries produce themselves and what they need will rise from 25 million to as much as 85 million tons a year for 1985. For the foreseeable future, food will have to be transferred on a substantial scale from where it is in surplus to where it is in shortage. There is the problem of reserves. Protection against the vagaries of weather and disaster urgently requires a food reserve. Our estimate is that as much as 60 million tons over current carryover levels may be required. In short, the world faces a challenge new in its severity, its pervasiveness, and its global dimension. Our minimum objective over the next quarter century must be to more than double world food production and to improve its quality. To meet this objective, the United States proposes to this conference a comprehensive program of urgent, cooperative, worldwide action on five fronts. Increasing the production of food exporters. Accelerating the production in developing countries. Improving means of food distribution and financing. Enhancing food quality. Ensuring security against food emergencies. Let me deal with each of these in turn. First, increased production by food exporters. A handful of countries, through good fortune and technology, can produce more than they need and thus are able to export. Reliance on this production is certain to grow through the next decade and perhaps beyond. Unless we are to doom the world to chronic famine, the major exporting nations must rapidly expand their potential and seek to ensure the dependable long-term growth of their supplies. They must begin by adjusting their agricultural policies to a new economic reality. For years, these policies were based on the premise that production to full capacity created undesirable surpluses and depressed markets, depriving farmers of incentives to invest and to produce. It is now abundantly clear that this is not the problem we face. There is no surplus so long as there is an unmet need. In that sense, no real surplus has ever existed. The problem has always been a collective failure to transfer apparent surpluses to areas of shortage. In current and foreseeable conditions, this can surely be accomplished without dampening incentives for production in either area. The United States has taken sweeping steps to expand its output to a maximum. It already has 167 million acres under grain production alone, an increase of 23 million acres from 2 years ago. In an address to the Congress last month, President Ford asked for a greater effort still. He called upon every American farmer to produce to full capacity. He directed the elimination of all restrictive practices which raise food prices. He assured farmers that he will use present authority as well as seek additional authority to allocate the fuel and fertilizer they require. And he urged the removal of remaining acreage limitations. These efforts should be matched by all exporting countries. Maximum production will require a substantial increase in investment. The best land, the most accessible water, and the most obvious improvements are already in use. Last year, the United States raised its investment in agriculture by $2.5 billion. The United States government is launching a systematic survey of additional investment requirements and of ways to ensure that they are met. A comparable effort by other nations is essential. The United States believes that cooperative action among exporting countries is required to stimulate rational planning and the necessary increases in output. We are prepared to join with other major exporters in a common commitment to raise production, to make the necessary investment, and to begin rebuilding reserves for food security. Immediately following the conclusion of this conference, the United States proposes to convene a group of major exporters, an export planning group, to shape a concrete and coordinated program to achieve these goals. Let me turn now to accelerated production of developing countries. The food exporting nations alone will simply not be able to meet the world's basic need. Ironically, but fortunately, it is the nations with the most rapidly growing food deficits which also possess the greatest capacity for increased production. They have the largest amounts of unused land and water. While they now have 35% more land in grain production than the developed nations, they produce 20% less on this land. In short, the largest growth in world food production can and must take place in the chronic deficit countries. Yet the gap between supply and demand in these countries is growing, not narrowing. At the current growth rate, the grain supply deficit is estimated to more than triple, and as I've pointed out, to reach some 85 million tons by 1985. To cut this gap in half would require accelerating their growth rate from the historically high average of 2.5% per annum to 3.5%, an increase in the rate of growth of 40%. Two key areas need emphasis to achieve even this minimum goal: new research and new investment. International and national research programs must be concentrated on the special needs of the chronic food deficit countries, and they must be intensified. New technologies must be developed to increase yields and reduce costs, making use of the special features of labor-intensive, capital-short economies. On the international plane, we must strengthen and expand the research network linking the less developed countries with research institutions in the industrialized countries and with the existing 8 international agricultural research centers. We propose that resources for these centers be more than doubled by 1980. For its part, the United States will in that same period triple its own contribution for the international centers, for agricultural research efforts in the less developed countries, and for research by American universities on the agricultural problems of the developing nations. The existing consultative group on international agricultural research can play an important coordinating role in this effort. The United States is gratified by the progress of two initiatives which we proposed at the sixth special session of the United Nations General Assembly last April. The International Fertilizer Development Center and the study on the impact of climate change on food supply. The Fertilizer Center opened its doors last month in the United States with funds provided by Canada and the United States. We invite wider participation and pledge its resources to the needs of the developing nations. And the important study on climate and food supply has been taken on by the United Nations World Meteorological Organization. National as well as international research efforts must be brought to bear. The United States offers to share with developing nations the results of its advanced research. We already have underway a considerable range of promising projects to increase the protein content of common cereals, to fortify staple foods with inexpensive nutrients, to improve plant fixation of atmospheric nitrogen, to reduce the need for costly fertilizers. We also plan a number of new projects. Next year, our space, agriculture, and weather agencies will test advanced satellite techniques for surveying and forecasting important food crops. We will begin in North America and then broaden the project to other parts of the world. To supplement the WMO study on climate, we have begun our own analysis of the relationship between climatic patterns and crop yields over a statistically significant period. This is a promising and potentially vital contribution to rational planning of global production. The United States will also make available the results of these projects to other nations. Finally, President Ford is requesting the National Academy of Sciences, in cooperation with the Department of Agriculture and other governmental agencies, to design a far-reaching food and nutrition research program to mobilize America's talent. It is the President's aim to dedicate America's resources and America's scientific talent to finding new solutions commensurate both with the magnitude of the human need and the wealth of our scientific capabilities. But while we can hope for technological breakthroughs, we cannot count on them. There is no substitute for additional investment in chronic food deficit countries. New irrigation systems, storage and distribution systems, production facilities for fertilizer, pesticide, and seed and agricultural credit institutions are all urgently needed. Much of this can be stimulated and financed locally, but substantial outside resources will be needed for some time to come. The United States believes that investment should be concentrated in strategic areas, applying existing and in some cases very simple technologies to critical variables in the process of food production. Among these are fertilizer, better storage facilities, and pesticides. Modern fertilizer is probably the most critical single input for increasing crop yields. It is also the most dependent on new investment. In our view, fertilizer production is an ideal area for collaboration between wealthier and poorer nations, especially combining the technology of the developed countries, the capital and raw materials of the oil producers, and the growing needs of the less developed countries. Existing production capacity is inadequate worldwide. New fertilizer industries should be created, especially in the developing countries, to meet local and regional needs for the long term. This could be done most efficiently on the basis of regional cooperation. The United States will strongly support such regional efforts. In our investment and assistance programs, we will give priorities to the building of fertilizer industries, and we will share our advanced technology. Another major priority must be to reduce losses from inadequate storage, transport, and pest control. Unfortunately, as much as 15% of a country's food production is lost after harvesting because of pests that attack grains in substandard storage facilities. Better methods of safe storage must be taught and spread as widely as possible. Existing pesticides must be made more generally available. Many of these techniques are simple and inexpensive. Investment in these areas could have a rapid and substantial impact on the world's food supply. To plan a coherent investment strategy, the United States proposes the immediate formation of a coordinating group for food production and investment. We recommend that the World Bank join with the Food and Agricultural Organization and the UN Development Program to convene such a group this year. It should bring together representatives from both traditional donors and new financial powers, from multilateral agencies and from developing countries, with the following mandate: to encourage bilateral and international assistance programs to provide the required external resources, to help governments stimulate greater internal resources for agriculture, to promote the most effective uses of new investment by chronic deficit countries. The United States has long been a major contributor to agricultural development. We intend to expand this contribution. We have reordered our development assistance priorities to place the central emphasis on food and nutrition programs. We have requested an increase of $350 million for them in our current budget. This new emphasis will continue for as long as the need exists. For all these international measures to be effective, governments must re-examine their overall agricultural policies and practices. Outside countries can assist with technology and the transfer of resources. The setting of priorities properly remains the province of national authorities. In far too many countries, farmers have no incentive to make the investment required for increased production because prices are set at unremunerative levels, because credit is unavailable, or because transportation and distribution facilities are inadequate. Just as the exporting countries must adjust their own policies to new realities, so must developing countries give a higher priority for food production in their development budgets and in their tax, credit, and investment policies. Let me now turn to improving food distribution and financing. While we must urgently produce more food, the problem of its distribution will remain crucial. Even with maximum foreseeable agricultural growth in the developing countries, their food import requirement is likely to amount to some 40 million tons a year in the mid-1980s, or nearly twice the current level. How is the cost of these imports to be met? The earnings of the developing countries themselves remain, of course, a principal source. The industrialized nations can make a significant contribution simply by improving access to their markets. With the imminent passage of the trade bill, the United States reaffirms its commitment to institute a system of generalized tariff preferences for the developing nations and to pay special attention to their needs in the coming multilateral trade negotiations. Nevertheless, an expanded flow of food aid will clearly be necessary. During this fiscal year, the United States will increase its food aid contribution despite the adverse weather conditions which have affected our crops. The American people have a deep and enduring commitment to help feed the starving and the hungry. We will do everything humanly possible to assure that our future contribution will be responsive to the growing need. The responsibility for financing food imports cannot, however, rest with the food exporters alone. Over the next few years in particular, the financing needs of the food deficit developing countries will simply be too large for either their own limited resources or for traditional food aid donors. The oil exporters have a special responsibility in this regard. Many of them have income far in excess of that needed to balance their international payments or to finance the economic development. The continuing massive transfer of wealth and the resulting impetus to worldwide inflations have shattered the ability of the developing nations to purchase food, fertilizer, and other goods. And the economic crisis has severely reduced the imports of the industrialized countries from the developing nations. The United States recommends that the traditional donors and the new financial powers participating in the Coordinating Group for Food Production and Investment make a major effort to provide the food and funds required. They should form a subcommittee on food financing, which, as a first task, would negotiate a minimum global quantity of food for whose transfer to food deficit developing countries over the next 3 years they are prepared to find the necessary finances. I have outlined various measures to expand production, to improve the earning capacity of developing countries, to generate new sources of external assistance. But it is not clear that even these measures will be sufficient, particularly if our current estimates of the gap of 1985 and beyond prove to be too conservative. Therefore, ways must be found to move more of the surplus revenue into long-term lending or grants to the poorer countries. The United States proposes that the Development Committee, created at the recent session of the governors of the International Bank and Monetary Fund, be charged with the urgent study of whether existing sources of financing are sufficient to meet the expected import requirements of the developing nations. If these sources are not sufficient, new means must urgently be found to supplement them. This must become one of the priority objectives of the countries and institutions that have the major influence in the international monetary system. Let me now discuss food quality. Supplies alone do not guarantee man's nutritional requirements. Even in developed countries, with ample supplies, serious health problems are caused by the wrong kinds and amounts of food. In developing countries, the problem is magnified. Not only inadequate distribution, but also the rising cost of food dooms the poorest and most vulnerable groups, children and mothers, to inferior quality as well as to insufficient quantity of food. Even with massive gains in food production, the world could still be haunted by the specter of inadequate nutrition. First, we must understand the problem better. We know a great deal about the state of global production, but our knowledge of the state of global nutrition is abysmal. Therefore, the United States proposes that a global nutrition surveillance system be established by the World Health Organization, the FAO, and UNICEF. Particular attention should be devoted to the special needs of mothers and young children and to responding quickly to local emergencies. Nutrition surveying is a field in which the United States has considerable experience. We are ready to share our knowledge and techniques. Second, we need new methods for combating malnutrition. The United States invites the WHO, FAO, and UNICEF to arrange for an internationally coordinated program in applied nutritional research. Such a program should set priorities, identify the best centers for research, and generate the necessary funding. The United States is willing to contribute $5 million to initiate such a program. Third, we need to act on problems which are already clear. The United States proposes an immediate campaign against two of the most prevalent and blighting effects of malnutrition, vitamin A blindness and iron deficiency anemia. The former is responsible for well over half of the millions of cases of blindness in less developed countries. The current food shortages will predictably increase this number. Iron deficiency anemia is responsible for low productivity in many parts of the world. Just as the world has come close to eradicating smallpox, yellow fever, and polio, it can conquer these diseases. There are available new and relatively inexpensive techniques which could have a substantial impact. The United States is ready to cooperate with developing countries and international donors to carry out the necessary program, and we are prepared to contribute $10 million to an international effort. Finally, we need to reflect our concern for food quality in existing programs. This conference should devote special attention to food aid programs explicitly designed to fight malnutrition among the most vulnerable groups. The United States will increase funding for such programs by at least $50 million this year. Let me now turn to the problem of food emergencies. The events of the past few years have brought home the grave vulnerability of mankind to food emergencies caused by crop failures, floods, wars, and other disasters. The world has come to depend on a few exporting countries, and particularly the United States, to maintain the necessary reserves. But reserves no longer exist, despite the fact that the United States has removed virtually all of its restrictions on productions, and our farmers have made an all-out effort. A worldwide reserve of as much as 60 million tons of food above present carryover levels may be needed to assure adequate food security. It is neither prudent nor practical for one or even a few countries to be the world's sole holders of reserves. Nations with a history of radical fluctuations in import requirements have an obligation, both to their own people and to the world community, to participate in a system which shares that responsibility more widely. And exporting countries can no longer afford to be caught by surprise. They must have advance information to plan production and exports. We commend FAO Director General Boehmer for his initiative in the area of reserves. The United States shares his view that a cooperative, multilateral system is essential for greater equity and efficiency. We therefore propose that this conference organize a reserves coordinating group to negotiate a detailed agreement on an international system of nationally held grain reserves at the earliest possible time. It should include all the major exporters as well as those whose import needs are likely to be greatest. This group's work should be carried out in close cooperation with other international efforts to improve the world trading system. An international reserve system should include the following elements: exchange of information on levels of reserve and working stocks, on crop prospects, and on intentions regarding imports or exports. Agreement on the size of global reserves required to protect against famine and price fluctuations. Sharing of the responsibility for holding reserves. Guidelines on the management of national reserves, defining the conditions for adding to reserves and for releasing from them. Preference for cooperating countries in the distribution of reserves. Procedures for adjustment of targets and settlement of disputes, and measures for dealing with non-compliance. The challenge before this conference is to translate needs into programs and programs into results. We have no time to lose. I have set forth a 5-point platform for joint action. To concert the efforts of the major surplus countries to help meet the global demand, to expand the capacity of chronic food deficit developing countries for growth and greater self-sufficiency, to transfer resources and food to meet the gaps which remain, to improve the quality of food, to ensure adequate nutrition, to safeguard many nations from sudden emergencies and the vagaries of weather. I have outlined the contribution that the United States is prepared to make in national or multilateral programs to achieve each of these goals. And I have proposed three new international groups to strengthen national efforts, coordinate them, and give them global focus. The Exporters Planning Group, the Food Production and Investment Coordinating Group, the Reserves Coordinating Group. A number of suggestions have been made for a central body to fuse our efforts and provide leadership. The United States is open-minded about such an institution. We strongly believe that whatever the mechanisms, a unified, concerted, and comprehensive approach is an absolute requirement. The American delegation, headed by our distinguished Secretary of Agriculture, Earl Butz, is prepared to begin urgent discussions to implement our proposals. We welcome the suggestions of other nations gathered here. We will work hard, and we will work cooperatively. Nothing more overwhelms the human spirit or mocks our values than the desperate struggle for sustenance. No tragedy is more wounding than the look of despair in the eyes of a starving child. Once famine was considered part of the normal cycle of man's existence, a local or at worst a national tragedy. Now our consciousness is global. Our achievements, our expectations, and our moral convictions have made this issue into a universal political concern. The profound promise of our era is that for the first time we may have the technical capacity to free mankind from the scourge of hunger. Therefore, today, we must proclaim a bold objective that within a decade, no child will go to bed hungry, that no family will fear for its next day's bread, and that no human being's future and capacities will be stunted by malnutrition. Our responsibility is clear. Let the nations gathered here resolve to confront the challenge and not each other. Let us agree that the scale and severity of the task require a collaborative effort unprecedented in history. And let us make global cooperation in food a model for our response to other challenges of an interdependent world: inflation, energy, population, protection of the environment. William Faulkner expressed the confidence that man will not merely endure, he will prevail. We live today in a world so complex that even only to endure, man must prevail. Global community is no longer a sentimental ideal, but a practical necessity. National purposes, international realities, and human needs all summon man to a new test of his capacity and his moral values. We cannot turn back or turn away. Human reason, Thomas Mann wrote, needs only to will more strongly than fate, and it is fate. Thank you.